welcome to episode 128 of the Marvel Studios News Podcast. My name is Sean Gerber, joined happily by Paul Herman. Oh. I think. How you doing, Paul? I know I'm happy. I'm assuming you're also happy and feeling good, feeling better than maybe when you were tweeting about ticket purchases over the weekend.
Yeah, I'm a little better. It's just a bittersweet thing. You know, it really is. And not about the movie itself, but just this everything. It's just kind of bittersweet because X-Men has been here for almost 20 years from the film franchise, of course. And it's just one of those things where I just feel that it's just kind of a it's a good thing it's moving on, but at the same time, it's like, man, an era has ended. Like, this is like a, you know, this is what kept my fandom alive for Marvel Comics, you know, and it's ending. So it's just kind of one of those reflective kind of periods where it's like you're mourning, you know? So I don't know.
I feel like I went through that before this. But anyway, we'll get into that. This episode is going to be our spoiler review for Dark Phoenix. And before we get into the review itself, just because there's been some, I don't know, concern out there that people who don't like this particular movie or have been a little sour towards the Fox X-Men franchise of late, that there's this sense that people always hated this franchise or that people hate this entire franchise, and it's all because they just love the MCU, which I'm sure in some cases you could find examples where that might be true, but by and large, I don't think that's what's going on here. I think that it's based largely on these last two movies in the main series and then some other missteps that we know have happened along the way. But by and large, I don't think there's this active hate of the Fox X-Men franchise. Most of the movies, or a lot of the movies, have been fairly well reviewed, good cinema scores from general audiences, a lot of box office success. So this idea that people just have been hating on this franchise from day one or for a long time, and it's all because of their love of the MCU, I just don't really think that's true. And it's certainly not true of the two of us. So we are going to spend a little bit of time before we get into the spoiler review. It's not going to be a full episode or anything like that. We're not doing a retrospective here on this episode anyway of the X-Men franchise. But as you mentioned, Paul, this franchise, I think, means a lot to both of us, and I'm sure it means a lot to many of you who are listening, wherever you may be listening to this. I mean, we've danced around some of these topics before in other episodes, that growing up, this stuff wasn't that cool, and growing up, there weren't, especially for movies, I mean, this stuff, well, when I say it wasn't that cool, we thought it was cool. Not everybody thought this was cool. But you had the 90s. X-Men was a little bit more mainstream than most Marvel properties. I mean, the comics were ridiculously popular, but then it had a really popular Fox animated series, and you had all other kinds of things for X-Men. So X-Men was kind of a big deal, and people already knew that it could had the potential to be a big deal by the time there was finally going to be a movie coming out in 2000. But what I loved so much about X-Men in 2000, besides the movie itself, was that I was finally seeing what really truly felt like a Marvel superhero movie. Yes, Blade was out, and I love the first Blade movie, but as much as that is a Marvel-based movie, it also just felt very action horror. It didn't necessarily feel like, it felt like this fringe kind of thing that got made into a movie, and I was very happy that that happened. But Blade didn't necessarily have that same feeling that X-Men did of, oh, this, now we could actually be on the brink of superhero movies really becoming a thing. I mean, there had been Superman movies and Batman movies. Hell, there had even been a movie about the Phantom, but it still wasn't feeling like we were going to be in this Marvel era until X-Men in 2000 and seeing the way that movie worked. Granted, not everything was up to snuff. I mean, black costumes instead of colorful X-Men costumes. But at that point, we were fairly desperate and willing to forgive that in exchange for seeing these characters on screen and seeing them in a very well-told, well-acted story. And I think that's mostly what we got in the first X-Men film, and then got a truly, what I think still holds up as a legitimately great comic book movie in X2, X-Men United. And there have been other high points along the way. I don't have quite as high of an opinion of X-Men First Class as some, but I definitely have a higher opinion than a lot of others. I think First Class was a solid win after a couple of misses with Last Stand and X-Men Origins Wolverine. I also thought the Wolverine in 2013 was mostly solid outside of some third act shenanigans, but most of that movie was solid. And then X-Men Days of Future Past, I was a big fan of that film. And then we have what the next thing was, X-Men Apocalypse. That was trash. And then we got Logan in 2017, which I have some issues with, but overall, I still think it's a very, it's a pretty great movie, and I loved it. And then we have Dark Phoenix now. I might have missed something in there, but yes, there's
the Deadpool movies.
Well, I'm talking about X-Men and X-Men characters. Like,
I got you. Okay.
I know there's Deadpool, but I don't. I know there was an X-Men cameo in Deadpool 2, but still doesn't really feel like part of the X franchise, and it's been doing its own thing. And of course, I count the Wolverine movies because Wolverine was born in the main X-Men franchise, at least sure. as far as our first meeting with him. So there's been some back and forth. There have been some ups and downs with this franchise, but the fandom has always been there. The love for these characters has always been there, and that's why when the movies have been good, I have loved the movies. When the movies have been bad, I've been really disappointed. Because, there was a lot of hope and a lot of expectation based on these characters. I will say, before I get your thoughts on the overall history of the franchise, maybe one of the saddest things about Dark Phoenix was going into it, and it didn't have the power to disappoint me because I had lost the ability to really expect anything from this series, at least anything good, because Apocalypse was so bad. Dark Phoenix, not so much disappointment, but still not a great movie. But before we get into Dark Phoenix... please, Paul, give us the history of your own affection towards this Fox X-Men era.
Well, I've got a huge affection for X-Men because those are the comics that I grew up reading extensively with Spider-Man. It was X-Men. And with the cartoon only enhanced my huge love for it already. It was like, I mean, it was on the verge of Star Wars at that point for me in my fandom. Spider-Man and X-Men and Star Wars were like hand in hand. The Avengers weren't even close. Have heard me on the podcast before talk about that, how the Avengers was more of a later thing in my life when it took Spider-Man joining the Avengers for me to actually care about the Avengers. So, not saying I hated them before, I just didn't really invest my money into it. It was all X-Men, and basically X-Men, Fantastic Four, and Spider-Man. And for the most part, and a lot of Hulk in there in as well.
Well, and you weren't alone in that. I think, a lot of people forget now because Avengers are so popular, but like for our generation growing up, mm-hmm. there was X-Men on one level mm-hmm. and then like take a few flights of stairs to get to the service elevator and go down a few more. And that was Avengers. Yeah. Like that's what it was growing up when these things were just comics and not movies.
Yeah. The comic, the Avengers comics weren't even like in the stratosphere. They were a joke. I mean, it was based, I think who was carrying that series was the old fans. We straight up was like, we're talking like from the George Perez, the 70s comics, all those people were carrying that title because it was, and again, in the 90s, remember too, that they had huge print runs of everything. So things were able to sustain themselves. So if that was reversed now, I don't know if Avengers survives the 90s, to be quite honest. It meaning, because right now, it is, back then the lowest selling comic was like, 100,000 copies or something like that?
Yeah, now you got Marvel DC books that struggle to sell 10,000 copies.
Yeah, and now they're like, oh man, like they would be killing for that, and that was like back in the day, that was a low selling title.
Yeah, the worst performing titles are now the best performing titles.
Yeah, so anyway, to kind of set people up is I love the X-Men. I grew up on that stuff. Like my brother, he introduced me to the X-Men and Spider-Man comic books. Like that's what we grew up loving and diving into and obsessing over. So my love for the franchise is huge because when I got out of comics in about high school, but my eighth grade in high school, when I kind of stopped buying actively, it was the X-Men is what kind of brought me back into comics. The movie itself, and was that success from that movie that made me kind of keep an eye on things, because again, seeing the X-Men live action was a dream come true because I never thought, Marvel was going to have anything live action. Mm-hmm. So when we fast forward to, it was, basically obviously X-Men is what kind of started it all essentially. And it was all from the success of that.
Do you Spider-Man. Remember your first X-Men screening to borrow from our Road to Infinity War series? Yes. What was your first X-Men screening? Who were you with?
Oh, dude. Oh man, I almost don't even want to ruin it. Cause I think it's not ruin it, but it's not that big of a deal, but it was with my brother. Unfortunately, my brother was kind of like, he just had a baby his wife was pregnant, something like that. And so he was kind of out of the picture as far as like being available for me, but I was graduating high school the day, like I was graduating like the day before or the week after or something like that.
Are you sure you were graduating? Because it was July of 2000.
Was it July? Or yeah, it was. I thought I was already graduated. So that I knew I had already graduated. I thought I was around graduation, but this is like 19 years ago. So bear with me, people. But I remember just being like fresh out of high school, just, you know, like we're all talking, and it was my main crew back then, which I'm still all friends with today, but they weren't comic book fans, but they all knew I was a comic book fan. So we all went and had a big group, and they're like, "Oh man, like Paul, are you excited?" I'm like, "Yeah, man, I'm really excited. This is like a dream come true for me. This is like something I never thought I'd get." And I remember going on Ain't It Cool News. You know, back in the day, I know it's still around, but back in the day, that's my first like movie website that I, you know, like looked at religiously. And I remember reading, and they posted an insider guy saying that I remember this very, very vividly. They said no female was going to want to be anywhere near this movie, because they talked about, you know, how this is going to be, the success of this movie is going to, you know, hinge on, you know, a female audience and getting, you know, them involved. And also, like, if this movie fails, then other comic book movies after it are not going to be, you know, where, you know, it's going to end everything, right? And I remember reading that, and some guy was saying like, "No, you know, I've seen this movie. It's terrible, blah, 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 blah." And this is like, you know, a week before. I'm like, man, this is not good, because if this doesn't work, I'll never see like other superhero movies I want to see. And I remember, you know, I had my friends' girlfriends were all going with us, and we all went, and I'm like, "All right, here we go. Let's hope it doesn't suck." And I was blown away how good it was. I heard all these negative things about it going into it, but all my friends, we just loved it. And it was a big deal. It was like good, like 7 or 8 of us. Mm. So it was a big crew, and they all were like, you know, wanted to know what I thought afterwards. Because I was a comic book, you know, guy, and I'm like, guys, that was amazing. And I saw it the next night with my other friends who were with me that same day. And I was like, dude, we have to see it like right now. I have to see it again. And my friend goes, "I'm not going to see it again. I'm just going to see something else." I'm like, "That's cool. See you, dude." And we went and saw it again. And I'm like, man, so good. And it was a big deal. And that, again, that is what helped me get back into comics. And that's why I think these movies are so important just for me, is because it keeps kids and back into reading comic books and keep them invested in these characters. Now it's taken a life of its own thanks to the MCU. And now it's its own Marvel universe and, you know, on the screen, which is amazing. But the X-Men is what started that, I think, kind of at least helped me stay involved in comic books, and obviously with Spider-Man too. But
I think it's definitely one of the milestones, you know. There's when we look at the history of the genre, I mean, the first time I saw X-Men, it was July, so summer between my junior and senior year of high school. And I had one friend at the time who was even remotely interested in comic books and superheroes. So guess who I went with? So we watched the movie, and you know, I was reading about superhero stuff on the internet at that point in time, for sure. I was locked in on all that, but I went into the movie with very little expectations other than I really hope this is good, because I love the X-Men and the trailers have looked pretty good. So I'm really hoping that this works out. And I remember being very, very satisfied by the end of the film. I don't know that I was blown away on quite the level that I have been by other movies. Certainly not like the first time I saw the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man or X in this own series, X2, X-Men United. Those are the kinds of movies that really blew me away. But this first X-Men film, I really enjoyed it. And it felt like, in addition to being a good movie all on its own, it felt like the promise of something more. You know, the promise that something more was on the way, that something even better was on the way, including, you know, better things from this particular franchise, and then bigger and better things across the genre, which, you know, and X-Men goes a long way in terms of making this a genre. You could argue, I mean, superhero movies, it's barely a genre when it's just Superman and Batman carrying the whole thing, and then every couple years or so, there's something else from the fringe that makes its way in, like Spawn or Phantom or whatever. But you know, the X-Men movies and comic book movies becoming a more regular thing, more of an almost annual, and now more than just annual fixture at the summer box office or the box office now throughout the year. A lot of that tracks and begins with X-Men in 2000. And, you know, and then, of course, I still think Spider-Man is essential, because X-Men, while it was a solid hit, wasn't anywhere near the runaway hit that Spider-Man was. And I think Spider-Man having all the success that it had in 2002 goes a long way in terms of, you know, putting that brass ring out there that every studio has been chasing ever since. So it's a little bit different with another, on another level with Spider-Man, but with X-Men. Yeah, I mean, this was a huge thing. It was a huge deal and a huge part of getting the genre to where it is today. And as somebody who absolutely loves comic books and superheroes and, of course, movies based on comic books and superheroes, I'll always have, you know, this particular film and, then of course, this and by extension, this entire franchise, it will always have a special place in my heart. So none of what I'm about to say about Dark Phoenix is coming from a place of going into this movie wanting to hate it, or just because I've had the MCU for the last 11 years that it's made me forget about wanting to like the X-Men. It has nothing to do with any of that. It's just based on the experience with that individual movie, although there were some trouble that started before this movie, obviously, but I still went into Dark Phoenix with an open mind.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I don't go into these movies hating it. I mean, I was talking to Mike from Twitter, and he was, he was like, he's big X-Men fan. And I was telling him, like, he said, go with open mind. I'm like, listen, you like Fantastic Four. He kind of brought that up to me, like, and I said, yeah, I also came into Fantastic Four the same way as I did Dark Phoenix. It's kind of like, I did not go in and expecting to enjoy it. And again, I liked it more than most people did. And I had no problem with that, but doesn't mean there wasn't problems. Doesn't mean there wasn't my point is I go into these things with an open mind and I'm always willing to give it a chance. I mean, like I said, we just had our Patreon Venom, episode that we'll be releasing soon. I'm not sure if it's going to be out by the time we have this out either, but, either way, like Venom, like I expected it to be completely terrible and I actually was really entertained by it. So I don't go to these movies expecting to hate it and wanting to trash it. And if I don't like it, I don't like it. If I like it, I like it. And I'll stick up for it. Like when me and you were going at it about Fantastic Four all those years ago. And, and we talked about with Andrew on the Patreon for the Venom commentary of why he loves it and all that stuff. So, I mean, like everything is subjective. Everyone has an opinion and it's fine. But at the same time, if a lot of people don't like something you like, don't be upset that they don't like it. And that's the thing. I'm not sure. There hasn't been a lot of that, I don't think.
To be clear up front, because everybody probably knows I'm going to lean negative on this movie. So
you already had your review, right?
My tweet's out there. I only did the non-spoiler review as a Patreon thing, but
I got you.
But on Twitter, my reaction tweet was negative. And so people, you can expect that from me. I don't know what to expect from Paul, although I'm guessing he's not going to be fighting me like he was on Fantastic Four. In 2015, certainly not as passionately. So, yeah. But none of this is to take away. And, if that means you love Dark Phoenix and don't want to listen to the rest of the episode, I get it. Cause it's not fun to listen to people, saying negative things about something that you like. But anytime we say negative things about a movie, it's the same as when we say positive things. We're not trying to take away from or invalidate your assessment. So if we like a movie and you don't, we're never trying to say you're wrong for not liking the movie. And just when we don't like something, we're not trying to say you're wrong for liking the movie. We have to share our honest opinion, our honest assessment of the movies that we're going to talk about on the show. So, it's never trying to ruin anybody else's love of something. If you love Dark Phoenix or you just thought it was okay, or wherever you land on the movie, that's totally fine and it's totally valid. And I always say, especially when I don't like a movie, if I don't like a movie and you do, well, not that there's a winning and a losing in this because it's all subjective, but we both went into a movie hoping to enjoy the experience and you did and I didn't, so that really works out more in your favor than in mine. Just be glad that you have another movie that you can enjoy. But 20 minutes in, let's go ahead and start this review for Dark Phoenix, and this is a spoiler review, so if you haven't seen the movie, then I guess maybe you don't want to listen to the rest of the show, or I know some of you have actually already told us that you want to listen to the spoiler review either in lieu of watching the movie, or maybe that's going to make you decide one way or another whether or not you're going to watch the movie. Whatever the case may be, I'm just throwing the spoiler warning out there. So if you haven't seen the film and you do not wish to be spoiled, then please do not continue to listen to the show any further. Go ahead and pause it and then come back once you've seen the movie. But if you're still here, then I'm going to go ahead and assume that you either have seen the film or you do not mind being spoiled about Dark Phoenix. There's not really that much to spoil with Dark Phoenix,
though.
Yeah, there
really isn't.
Not that much really happens in Dark Phoenix. I did not enjoy this movie. I will say that one of the nicest things I can say about the movie is that it is not as outright awful in my mind as Apocalypse was 3 years ago. I really loathed Apocalypse. I didn't have that same kind of passion in a negative way for Dark Phoenix, so it's got that going for it, which I guess is nice. So I don't think this is the worst film in the series, but we know this series has its wins and its losses. I count this one as a loss. I really didn't have... There wasn't a lot to love about this movie. Actually, it started off okay. The car crash sequence is actually very well staged. So Simon Kinberg, as a director, I will say, visually, it's a pretty good car crash. The rest of the movie, not a great car crash. Well, even the opening with the space mission, some of that's okay, although I don't need three people in a row to be like, so we're going to space? So we're going to space? Oh, we're doing space missions now. Yes, you're going to space. Anyway, so there's some okay stuff happening in here, but then the further this goes along, the less invested I am, because there's just, everything just feels so underwritten. Just so undercooked. I mean, oh my goodness, Jessica Chastain, what are you doing in this movie?
Yeah.
Why did you sign on for this? What was in the script? Like, what must be on the cutting room floor? Why? I don't understand. And this just proves, you know, what some of the fears were all along. And this movie actually is not a carbon copy of The Last Stand, but it still makes some of the same mistakes, and it still doesn't do any better of a job of capturing the comic book than or even the spirit of the comic book than The Last Stand did. So there's just so much of this that's off. It's just flat. Simon Kinberg loves to ground these things, and I don't know why, but it's why he was never the person to tell this story. He wasn't the first time, and surprise, surprise, he's not the second time. It's why he wasn't the guy for Fantastic Four either. I mean, this guy just continues to, there's been so many, I'm rolling my eyes at every think piece that's been written, and no offense to anybody who wrote them. I've read some, and there's really great writing in there, but there's so much dissecting of what went wrong with Dark Phoenix when it's so obvious all along the way. I mean, we've seen these mistakes at every point of what was happening in the development of this movie, from the fact that Simon Kinberg was telling a story he already told poorly, doing that again. You know, and being a guy who loves to talk about grounded and gritty when he's trying to tell stories that are not grounded and gritty, and that's not what it's like. Pick other stories. If you like grounded and gritty, there's plenty of stories for you. Don't pick the ones, and don't pick the characters in the case of Fantastic Four that don't fit that. It's not that hard. Like, you could tell all kinds of different X-Men stories, just as you can tell all kinds of different stories for all kinds of other characters across Marvel, DC, whatever. Pick the ones and pick the stories that fit. And if, you know, I don't know. I have a very hard time wrapping my head around just a studio and a creative team just making another series of bad decisions over and over and one after the next. And I know there's a lot of other cop-outs right now of like, oh, well, the Disney-Fox deal screwed everything up, or they had to change it because it was too much like Civil War or Captain Marvel. First, people tried to say that the reshoots had to have been for Captain Marvel because it was too similar to another movie. Well, Simon Kinberg already said that wasn't true, and then he tried to say that it's because of similarity to Civil War. Well, dude, Civil War came out in May of 2016. You shot this movie over a year later. So if you were worried about similarity to Civil War, then you should have factored that into it before you started shooting. So I don't buy it. I think all of that stuff is spin. All of those things are just crap excuses for a movie that was bad all along. There was talk about really poor test screenings before the reshoots even started. So this movie was in bad shape before the Disney-Fox deal. And then I think what ultimately happened is that a decision was made because they knew, as a result of the Disney-Fox deal, this would not have been an order from Disney. So for anybody who wants to say Disney or Marvel Studios interfered, that's not what happened with these reshoots, because the Disney-Fox deal was pending, so Disney and Marvel Studios quite literally could not tell anyone at Fox what to do, and that includes Simon Kinberg as the director of this film. on their own. They made their own decisions to go ahead and say, well, we may have thought at one point this would be a two-part story, but now we got to make sure this is a one-part story, and we have to cap things off. And but maybe it had nothing to do with that. Because there was talking, I saw another report saying that they made the decision to switch from a two-part story to a one-part story before they even started shooting the movie the first time. And if that's the case, great. But as far as reworking the third act, which I think was ending in space or something for a train sequence that Magneto could solve in 2 seconds but doesn't because they want to have it last a while, okay, fine. But there's just so much going on in this movie that's so undercooked. It's half thought out. There's just things that happen for no reason. But before I can just keep going. So I got to stop and I got to interrupt myself and let Paul in here.
Well, I appreciate that. And you know, Sean, I have a famous saying now. I know it's not really famous, but at least famous for me. You're not wrong. And here's the thing. You're absolutely right. It's not as bad as Apocalypse. Apocalypse serves its own, like, its own island of atrocity.
Oh, yeah.
And it is just, Rob Liefeld had said it best. He said this single-handedly destroyed the X-Men universe. And, you know, he called it a big blue pile or something like that. It was really funny. And it was really interesting to have him. He's been very candid lately. But anyway.
Hey, you want your proof of that? That's why nobody showed up this weekend to watch Dark Phoenix. Yeah.
And so, and that's a great point. And I, me and you were not kind on that movie. And I think we were fair to not be. I don't think it was very good. I mean, people don't have to, again, in our opinions, wasn't very good. And we just could not get behind that movie. And I'm someone who loved, you know, has been, for the most part, I've liked all the X-Men films, even Last Stand to an extent. Last Stand is a little bit of a mess, but I knew the reasons why going into that movie. I expected it to be a little bit messy, and it was, but I still enjoyed.
Last Stand over this one. Simon Kinberg did a better job the first time around.
Yeah, and so yeah, and you also said it best. Is that it doesn't really. It's weird that you'd have the same writer doing a second go at it, and still borrow from his first yeah. one. You know, it doesn't. That was what was really frustrating for me, and I think you said it best. You said it best because Kinberg did not deliver a pile of garbage. It's an adequate looking film. What he delivered, though, was a very
well. He delivered a well shot movie.
Exactly.
Nothing else about it is well. Very little else about it is adequate.
I say adequate in a sense to where it's not something you can like. You'll be you're going to get sick watching it, meaning it's so bad. Yeah. It's you can't watch it. That's what I mean. It's adequate. You can watch it and go, okay, people said, you know, I watched it and survived. You will too. And they're not wrong. It wasn't that bad. Cause if it was that bad, I probably would have just walked out. Which I've never walked out of a movie, to be honest. But anyway, this is my feelings on Dark Phoenix. It's not terrible. I liked it more than Apocalypse. It's just a really, really forgettable X-Men movie. And it just, to be honest, I just wanted to get it over with. And yeah. I don't like saying that. And I wanted to do the same thing for Fantastic Four, the Josh Trank and Simon Kinberg film. And I actually really ended up enjoying that way more at the end. I was like, well, yeah, I enjoyed that way more than I was anticipating. I did not, unfortunately, have that with Dark Phoenix. And that has nothing to do with the fact that this is the last movie or anything. You know, I'll get into some positives here in a minute, mm-hmm. but I really want to dive on something that, at least for me, and you kind of touched on it too already. But my main issue with this movie is that it doesn't really seem like an X-Men movie. And what I mean by that is that it seemed like you have all these films that set up that they're hated, that they're, you know, they're feared, and that they're here for a reason. And then at the very end, they all love them. Like, everyone's cheering the X-Men. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, what is this? You know, and Professor Xavier is like fine dining, and I know it's supposed to be like his arc, and he's like, you know, he's a different person now, and Mystique keeps it just seemed weird and random and just off to me. It just didn't seem right. It seemed like, you know what it seemed like, Sean? It seemed like a writer who had no idea who he was writing.
I mean, they literally gave the President of the United States a bat phone to X-Mansion.
People
just laughed at that in the press at the press screening I was at. Like, just
Yeah,
it's so cheeseball. And you know what? Fine. if you want to, I mean, I understand that's part of the thing, right? And metaphorically speaking, there's a lot of validity to some of the stuff that's being explored there. But if you're going to introduce certain concepts, you really got to get into it. Otherwise, don't do it. You know, Black Panther introduced some very strong concepts and that it dives deep into with the dialogue and the themes of it, and, you know, and everything that's happening in the story for that film. So for Dark Phoenix, there is this very interesting idea that Charles Xavier puts out there. Is like, even with all the progress we've made, even though, like, there's, you know, there's a direct line from the office of the president to us, even though there's all of this, we've made all this progress since Apocalypse. Okay. We've made all this progress. It can all go away just like that. With one, we are one bad day away from losing all the progress that we've made, which is something that's very true of marginalized groups, that they get every, they have to work so long, so hard, even though they shouldn't have to, but they do, in order to have some sort of mainstream acceptance in a society. And it's crap that they have to do that in the first place, but it does happen. And then, of course, one bad thing happens and it takes it under, you know, it just undermines all of it. And none of that should be true, but it is. So it's a very fascinating idea to explore with X-Men. But the movie doesn't really want to get into that. It plays lip service to it, but it doesn't really get into it, because most of the things that would be the result of that, we don't really see on the screen. We don't see it in any, explored in any in-depth sort of way. We're glossing past that to just go through the A, B, C, and D of this plot. And the plot isn't really that interesting. Like, Jean gets the Phoenix Force, kills some people, goes and looks for a little bit of help, can't get that help, and then she finds a mysterious alien friend. It's like, okay, cool, we're pals. And then everybody has to stop her. And then, like, there's just so much of that that's just so, it's just so flat. It's all, there are some interesting ideas here, but none of them really get explored in any meaningful sort of way. So there's nothing here to really latch onto. Like you say, that's why this movie is going to be forgettable.
Exactly.
What's happening here that you're really supposed to sink your teeth into? I don't know the answer to that question.
And so with all that, I just, you know, it just seemed like there wasn't anything really besides the fact that it looked like, you know, the actors that were in the previous films. It just didn't seem like the same, like, it just seemed like very, everything was just kind of out of nowhere. And it didn't flow for me.
Mm-hmm.
Just the fact that, like, they go on this, you know, trip, and it seems so formulaic too. Like, we had to get Quicksilver out of the picture fast, you know, no pun intended. And we had to get Mystique out of here, because Lord knows, you know, she doesn't want to be in this movie anymore. And she certainly made it obvious throughout the whole movie. She's just like, basically, you couldn't be more wooden than that, you know. And I'm sorry, like, I have not been a fan of her Mystique, like. I just haven't. I don't like her attitude towards it. Like, she just doesn't seem to care. And it's so, to me, it's so evident in this movie. I'm like, what? Why? I just don't get it. I've never understood it. And so you have all of that. And it just seems so, just like, formulaic's not even the right word. It just seemed like, so like, okay, you did this to get rid of that. You did this to get rid of that one. And I mean, like I said, it wasn't like the dialogue wasn't all terrible, but just some of the situations and the dialogue was in, like the X-Men phone. And again, Professor Xavier is sitting, you know, at his thing where he's like, I have to, hello, everyone. And he just starts talking to everyone in front of the, whatever that was, the Senate or whatever.
Well, I mean, the Xavier stuff drove me nuts, because it's like, there's stuff in the comics where Xavier makes decisions that you don't necessarily feel are okay. And he did something here that wasn't okay. That kind of stuff isn't inherently wrong for Xavier, but there's nothing about this guy that's even a bit like heroic or likable in this movie. Like, he's just all caught up. He's the same selfish dope that he was back in the, you know, back in that bar in the 60s when he's trying to talk about mutation to get girls. You know, he's that same guy. There's nothing about him that shows that he's any different than he's been for the last 30 years, which I'm going to get into time jumps later. But yeah, like with the Xavier, like, he's just completely unlikable. There's a difference between Xavier, who can be hard to like sometimes, versus, no, he's just straight up unlikable. And that's what this movie just doesn't get about these characters, because everything has to be so one note. It doesn't understand any subtlety or nuance. So everything is always, you know, it's this or the other. They don't, you know, Simon Kinberg with his script and his direction here, he doesn't know how to put things in the middle and, you know, challenge you more as a viewer. It's just, oh, Xavier's kind of a, you know, he's kind of a jerk in this movie. And that's just what he is this time. And I know he's been a jerk before, and I guess he's still a jerk and whatever. You're not, there's no hero there. And Xavier, to me, as complicated as he may be in the books, he's still a hero. And I'm not seeing that in these movies, especially not in this one for sure.
Yeah, and that was so peculiar to me, and the fact that Magneto's got his own thing, like, oh, let me have my own commune, and you know, or whatever. And it's just kind of like, okay,
dude,
and then
the dude's got a summer camp, and they're calling it Genosha. Okay,
I mean, it's just there's a lot of things in here that just seems so. And again, there wasn't any scale to it. Like I kind of expected a little bit more of pizzazz, if you will. And I feel like they blew the whole budget on the beginning of the movie. And that's what it seems like anyway.
I mean, I don't know where that's the worst part about this is that the money doesn't show up on screen. Like they're talking about because of reshoots, like the budget is over $200 million. Where did it go? Where did it go? Did they have to pay like Jennifer Lawrence 40 of that to agree to come back and do like another little, you know, first act as Mystique because she was over that role? I don't know. You know, good thing she was in the portion of the movie that they were actually wearing X-Men costumes because then she only had to put makeup on her face and didn't have to do the whole, you know, body routine for Mystique that she got tired of doing. And I don't blame her for getting tired of doing that, by the way. I'm sure it sucks as an actor to be sitting there having to do that for hours and hours. But yeah, with Mystique, it's like there's just not enough there, you know. And when she dies, I don't care. And I know that sounds callous, but the story didn't get me to care about her. So when it happens, it doesn't really affect me because I'm not really caring about what's going on with any of this. There's no I'm not being given an opportunity to really invest in these characters and their story.
We're supposed to assume that they like Jean and Mystique have this close relationship,
right?
But there's nothing that shows that they are close
because
like,
we just have to assume that stuff happened in the last 10 years. And maybe that's why these time jumps exist. I don't know why. This movie is set in 1992. The only reason I can tell that this movie is set in 1992 is because it actually writes 1992 on the screen. There is nothing else about this story that sets it in 1992. Although Storm does use thirsty as a euphemism in 1992, granted I was 9 in 1992, so I wasn't up on those kinds of euphemisms, but I'm pretty sure thirsty as a euphemism doesn't date back to 1992. I might be wrong, but Simon Kinberg, this is what happens when you make arbitrary decisions. And for as much as people want to beat up the X-Men franchise for the continuity breaks and how much of a mess this timeline is, and it is a mess. It totally is a mess. But I'm willing to roll with those kinds of things. I'm willing to roll with contradictions in the timeline, breaks in continuity, all of that, when there is a compelling story reason that superseded the needs of continuity. If something about this story being set in 1992, if there was something about this story that was so pivotal that it'd be set in 1992 and it was a really good reason, a really good story reason for it, I would happily accept it and say, okay, I will ignore the continuity breaks that this causes because it's worth it for this creative choice in the story. Just like when stuff happens like that in comic books. Like, look, this story needs to do this and it needs to do it in this way, and I agree with it, even if it causes issues for continuity or retcon something or whatever. That stuff happens. The more stories you tell with these characters, the deeper you get into it, the more years a franchise goes on, and it's 19 years now since the first X-Men film was released. Inevitably, you will have some of those things, and I'm willing to forgive them when there's an actual reason for it, but there's no reason for it. Everything about these time jumps is so completely arbitrary. And so now we're at a point where Charles Xavier and Eric Lencher, you know, Mystique, we can go ahead and say that her, you know, shape-shifting abilities also, you know, slows down her aging process. Okay, fine, I'll buy that. But there's nothing about that really for Charles Xavier or Eric Lencher, and they have aged so much less in the last 30 years than they are about to age in the next 8 years for this X-Men movie that's set in 2000. And they could have avoided that by having with Days of Future Past, but they brought it back to Famke Janssen. Like, they brought it back to the main X-Men class that we knew from this first film in 2000. So they're the one who set up that timetable and keep it in line. And that's a Simon Kinberg, you know, the film that he produced and wrote with Days of Future Past. So he's not respecting the stories that he's writing himself. And he's just moving all over the place on a whim. There's no thought. This stuff is not thought out. There's just not enough care in this. So when you're making these arbitrary decisions in terms of timelines that just blow up the whole thing for absolutely no reason, of course I'm going to be frustrated as a viewer.
Yeah, and I think that there's so much in this movie that's not just outright terrible. You, again, like you said it best, Sean, where did the budget go? You know, where is the, you know, I think that what the Avengers have proven is that costumes can sell. You know, we can, yeah, you can put out, people are not afraid of.
They had some pretty dope costumes at the very end of Apocalypse. It was the one nice thing about that movie. And where'd they go?
Yeah. And they said instead they gave them these very old school X Factor from the early 90s costumes right before the X-Men Golden and Blue Team costumes. If you guys remember those, they have they're all blue and they have a big yellow X on them.
Yeah.
Very similar to that.
I mean,
and
you can go ahead and claim that it's similar to a comic book costume. It doesn't make them good costumes.
No, I agree. But here's the problem. They only wore them.
Yeah.
They only wore
first
them.
Act.
First act, and they were gone.
They go to space, and they go to Jean Grey's dad's house.
It's just so weird to me that, you know, I remember Guardians of the Galaxy showed you can get weird. You can go up in space, and people can accept it. And that's a big part of the Dark Phoenix. Not they don't come down here and hang out and all that gets revealed. It's a really compelling story. You know what happens in the comic book series of of Dark Phoenix, which is really good, by the way. It's still, you know, obviously the animated show is, I think, the best adaptation straight up from the comic, but the comic is still a classic. It's brilliant. I mean, I reread it years ago and I thought it was fantastic. And there's a great, you know, spoiler alert if you want to read the comic, but basically at the very end, the X-Men have to fight the Shi'ar Imperial Guard for Jean Grey's life.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like fighting tooth and nail, even though she's like the harbinger of death, you know, they're going to fight for Jean. And it's a really cool moment of like, they're not going to give up on their own, even though like they have Lalandra and everyone's telling them they're going to die. And there's a lot of great moments and cool characters you could do. And again, it'd be a high budget, but you know, but no, we get, again, you take the elements of The Last Stand.
You can make that movie for $200 million, which is what they spent on this film.
Yeah. But you didn't have to have Jennifer Lawrence in the movie. You didn't have, I mean, whatever. I mean, it's just really unfortunate because there is a great story there of Jean Grey and Scott. There's a great, I mean, again, the Dark Phoenix comic books. I'm going back to the comic books now. There, you know, again, you kind of blew everything already with like Hellfire Club already and things like that, because that's also a pivotal part. But really, the essence, you could have the Shi'ar Empire show up and be like, you are, you know, again, I like the idea that he brought it into space and then they kind of, there's space elements. But let's go the full route, because that movie would have made a lot of money. If you would have made a space epic thing where it's, you know, and again, people could have complained, like, this looks like Guardians of the Galaxy. But here's the thing, folks. It came out way before Guardians of the Galaxy. This is like the OG original comic book space opera that's not Star Wars. This is like, this is considered one of the best Marvel comic book stories ever written. And that's what happens. They go up to space and they have to go and defend Jean from these enemies or these people that want to destroy her. And they basically give him a fighting chance, saying, if you can defeat us, then, you know, basically you can move on, but we're going to kill her. And in the end, she takes her own life because she's like, I have to. And, you know, it's great storytelling. And this, you don't really get that. And you have Jean kind of save the day at the end, and she's like, oh, you know, I'm going to sacrifice myself. And it's just, there's not really, it's just, I don't know. Like, you already kind of knew what was going to happen because of the first movie.
Yeah. It doesn't mean anything when it happens.
Exactly.
You know, the idea of, oh, I'm going to, you know, my emotions are my strength. Well, that hasn't really been the issue here, or your emotions. I mean, not really. I mean, I know it's in some half-hearted way it is, because you say, well, it's, you know, the Phoenix Force is capitalizing on her emotions and everything that's been buried in her, the trauma with the car crash and losing her parent or losing her mom, and then finding out that her dad, you know, just let Xavier basically take her. And Xavier wiped her memory of her father, made it seem like both of her parents were dead. You know, okay, fine, but it's not like you set that up in the beginning that Jean Grey, with her powers, is having issues with her emotions. Like, it's all just related to the Phoenix Force. It's this thing that gets introduced. It's not like she's having a major problems or anything before that. And the movie kind of forgets that we actually saw her tapping into the Phoenix Force at the end of Apocalypse. Now, I don't blame Simon Kinberg or anybody else for forgetting Apocalypse. I wish I could, too. But, like, it's still a movie that doesn't pay attention. This series, it's not paying attention to its own story beats throughout. And even if you want to say, well, forget about X-Men Apocalypse and we're just going to treat this as its own standalone story, it's still not really working. And because it doesn't want to settle into any one thing, it just wants to introduce little things here and there and explore them on the surface, but not dive deep, so that when these things happen, they're not really paying off in a satisfying way. And then getting into the villain stuff, I mean, I'm glad that these weren't the Shi'ar Empire. I'm glad that that's not Lilandra, who Jessica Chastain is playing, because they are nothing characters. They are absolutely nothing characters. I mean, I know that now we know where all like the Skrull rumors came from, and maybe at one point these things were called Skrulls, and then they ended up changing that. I don't know. But they are the Dabari, thanks to subtitles. We know that that's what race they are, who... The only role they really have, although Vuk is a Dabari who actually survived, I think, in the comics or something like that, but, you know, not really all that prominent of a character. But the Dabari, it is true in the Phoenix Saga, they are a planet that gets destroyed by the Phoenix Force, but that's why the Shi'ar actually want to destroy the Phoenix Force, and if that means killing Jean Grey, so be it. Mm-hmm. That's where all that comes from, but these aren't the Shi'ar, they're just the Dabari, and it's a good thing. And you feel like the only reason that they are shape-shifting aliens is not because it's all that integral to the plot. They are shape-shifting aliens to basically get credit for having aliens, but they can look like just regular Joes in suits. That's what this is, including Jessica Chastain's character. If they have the ability to shape-shift, why would you continue to be like this one same person? Who is it that the human Jessica Chastain, who is she that makes it so that she would be in charge of everything? Like, why wouldn't they be more like Skrulls, who will shapeshift to be the person they need to be at the time they need to be them, and then move on to the next thing? There's none of that. These characters are just there to be as plain as possible. We gave you aliens in this story. Okay, sure. But they're wearing suits and ties. They're wearing overcoats. Like, this is who these aliens are. There's nothing about this that's visually interesting. It's all, what's the least interesting way I can tell you this story? I've got it. That's what this is, over and over and over again. I mean, there is a fight that is, what, on Fifth Avenue in New York, where Storm is having a really hard time fighting a dude with snapping dreadlocks. Okay? Yeah. What is that? Why is that? Why is that happening?
Yeah.
So Storm, yeah. Cut to Storm a few minutes later on the train sequence, rising into the air and just blowing up aliens left and right, hitting them with lightning. Why didn't she do that to the dreadlock guy? Would have been just as easy, and there was only one of him. Cool. Take him out. There's no reason why that should be a struggle for Storm. And why is this a character? I mean, there might be a comic book basis for this guy, and I'm just not pulling it. Okay, fine. But if there is, he's not a great villain. Don't use him. Use somebody else. That's what it should be. It's not interesting to watch a guy with whipping dreadlocks in a one-on-one fight with Storm and acting like that dude has a chance of lasting 10 seconds. No way. That's garbage.
It's how Storm was. You know what's funny is I cannot wait for a better Storm, because this actress, I apologize.
Look, let me be clear. I don't fault Alexandra Shipp, and I don't think it would be fair to hold this stuff against her. This character is so underwritten, and
I agree.
She's not the one making a decision to have this character, who's one of the most powerful mutants in Marvel Comics, to be having a tough time with the whipping dreadlocks guy. No way.
It's amazing to me, because I'm looking forward to having a different Storm, because I love Storm from the comics. Like, if you read the Chris Claremont comic books from when he started, he made Storm back in the 70s, a fantastic, interesting, amazing character. And I was amazed at how great he wrote her. Like I thought she was phenomenal. And she is one of the best X-Men, in my opinion, one of my favorite X-Men. And it's just a shame that we just haven't got that on screen. And I'm looking forward to the MCU version because I feel like Kevin Feige will be able to tap into that, because they have not tapped into that. Even with Halle Berry, with this actress, just has not happened. And it's the writing. I think some of it's the performances too, but they just haven't nailed it. And she, like you said, Sean, I remember watching that and being like, how is Storm not taking this guy out? Because in the comic books, she takes on Callisto and in hand-to-hand combat for the Battle of the Morlocks.
Mm-hmm.
And like no problem, like she takes it on, like no powers. And like here she's like, oh, dreadlocks are giving me a hard time. It's like, are you freaking kidding me? You know, it's like, this is I laughed out loud. I was like, are you kidding? And you know, like, she had some good moments on the train, I thought, sure, but like you said yourself, like, why didn't she take them out? It was silly.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, why is this dreadlock guy even here? I don't even know who this guy is.
I don't know. But he's putting up a much better fight against Storm than he should, and that's because there's not enough care being put into this in terms of, well, if we want to have the X-Men having a really hard time, I don't know, Fifth Avenue or maybe Central Park West, but like, apologize if my New York geography is off. But the movie wants a stalemate here on this street, and the people keeping them across the street are just people who don't have any chance in hell of holding them back. And this, the most egregious example is this dreadlock mutant who's just whipping his dreadlocks around, and that's enough to tackle Storm. But it's not, and even the movie knows it's not, because there is a dramatic change in her power level that we see not long after this. So that's where the movie is just taking steps for its own convenience. Oh, I need this to be a challenge, and I need to make sure all the other X-Men are held at bay, so that way it can just come down to, at different points in time, Jean and Vuk, then Jessica Chastain character, against Magneto, and then against Professor X. That's what this has to be right now. So I need to have a stalemate. Well, then bring yourself another mutant into this who's powerful enough to hold Storm at bay, but that's not what happens here. And that kind of stuff is just so frustrating. And I know that there can be inconsistencies in terms of power levels and things like that in these movies. I understand that that happens, and there are probably examples where it happens in MCU movies, DC movies, whatever. There are occasional moments like this, but it feels like it pops up more and more in these films, and they don't have the redeeming qualities of other films where there's other really great stuff to latch onto to maybe make it a little easier to forgive the inconsistencies like this one. When there's an overall lack of care that shines through in the storytelling in these movies, it makes it that much harder to forgive mistakes, because it all feels like it comes back to that lack of care. So, and this example with Storm, it's a perfect example of that. And then if we go to the train sequence, again, the least interesting version of that, you have Magneto who solves it by crushing everybody in a car at the end, which he could have done at the very start. Now, I know that this is something that other superhero movies do, where a character who maybe is powerful enough to solve the whole thing in a couple seconds, it doesn't necessarily use their powers all at once and it allows everybody else to fight. Okay, fine. Even for Dark Phoenix, I'm willing to roll with that to an extent. But there's other ridiculous inconsistencies. Sometimes the aliens are bulletproof, sometimes they're not. It just depends on whether or not you need them to die at that point in the fight. There's just everything about this is so inconsistent and so haphazard, and when I talk about the lack of effort in this, I'm not talking about the crew who makes this movie. I know people who are working on this stuff, they are busting their ass every single day on set to make these things as good as they can be, but the storytelling decisions, I feel like those show a lack of care, not just a lack of understanding of the material, although that's part of it, but there's a lack of care. When you make arbitrary decisions like time jumps and there's no reason for it, that's a lack of care. When you take a character like Dazzler and you just throw her into a forest party because you want brownie points for having this character in there, okay, fine, but that's not that's not a character. You threw a cameo in there for no apparent reason, just because you want to be able to say, see, guys, we like the comics. No, I don't buy it. There's not a respect for the source material in this stuff. Certainly not the specific source material from which this story was adapted. And it shows all across the board. But even if we ignore that this is based on a much better story and we try and take it on its own terms, it still doesn't work. It just doesn't.
It's funny you brought up Dazzler because that was probably one of my favorite parts. And I'm not joking either. Like, I thought I was really – I was like, oh, Dazzler, finally. That's awesome. Like, not just – Dazzler, like, you know, from the 80s that I knew, we're talking from the 70s. They brought in that Dazzler, which I thought was really cool. I'm like, oh, okay. I that was probably like my favorite part of the movie, to be quite honest. And I'm not trying to be funny.
See, your favorite part of the movie is is a character who's on the screen for 2 seconds.
Yep.
Because, you know, and she actually does look accurate to the comic book, but
from the 70s. Yeah.
But the reason that's your favorite part of the movie, like, so this shallow thing is your favorite part of the movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's because what they showed you with Dazzler was great. It's because because it's literally the best thing in the movie. But that's as a result of how bad everything else is.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's, and if I may, because I know I haven't really that much to say about this movie. We've covered everything, I think, to be honest, because it's just kind of a mess. There's a couple positives I'd love to focus on, and that honestly being one of them, to be quite honest, because I was like, yeah, that was, I was like, oh, that's really cool. I literally said that out, which, by the way, the theater I saw it in was empty. So I was like, you know, I was doing that thing where I was kind of laying in 2 seats, but I put the seat up and I had my legs up and I was just kind of hanging out, like just kind of lounging. It was kind of nice. I haven't had that in a long time. But yeah, I was like, oh, that's cool. You know, and whatever. And I thought that scene was nice. A couple other positives. I actually thought, oh my gosh, why am I forgetting her name? The girl who played Jean Grey. Sophie Turner. I thought she did a good job. Like, I thought she was actually, the material they gave her, like, did well.
I think she did as well as the material allowed.
Yeah,
so,
I didn't hate her performance. I was expecting to hate it. And I was like, oh, I did not dislike this performance. Yeah. I thought she did it adequate. Like, again, she wasn't given great material, but she did better than most people in that movie that I thought was given the same kind of material. I thought Jessica Chastain was wasted, but she wasn't terrible. I bought her being like the kind of soulless alien.
Yeah.
Like, she was good for what she was.
She was an unbelievable monotone whisperer.
No, honestly, and I mean that. Like, I don't mean that. I don't mean any disrespect by that, to be honest.
I don't mean any disrespect towards her by that.
Right. Well, right. But I will say I thought Michael Fassbender was fine. I mean, again, I thought he was good. Nicholas Hoult wasn't my favorite. I thought this was a really weak movie for him. He's not a terrible actor. He's great, actually, but he just didn't sell it on me. And I love Michael Fassbender. Yeah.
I mean, I didn't have a problem with the performances, so I actually give a lot of credit to the actors for trying to take so little that they were given in this movie and make the most out of the situation. I give them all credit for that. I give Jessica Chastain credit for that. It's really unfortunate. I do not know, because that's somebody who you have to imagine has had opportunities to be a part of this genre before, and even if not, or those previous opportunities weren't the right one. I don't know what made this one the right one. I don't know what she saw. I don't know if something changed a lot from the script she first saw to the movie they eventually made or whatever, but I just don't see what was so attractive about this role for her. But she signed on, and it is what it is, and she was, you know, left out to dry like most of this cast, you know, like this, as was the case with the rest of this cast. The whole thing is just underwritten and undercooked, and I can't hold that against the actors. I mean, if the material seemed like it was better, I mean, you could say, like, well, it's on the actors to elevate the material, and to some extent that's true, but there's only so much you can do with that. There still has to be more around you as an actor, and there just isn't. I mean, that's part of what makes it that much more frustrating, because the performances of the cast, that's one of my positives as well. I feel like everybody's doing, and even Nicholas Hoult I would put in there, and Alexander Shipp, I feel like they're doing the best they can with what they've been given. They just haven't been given enough. And that makes it very frustrating, because when you have, you know, for Simon Kinberg as the writer and director of this movie, you have so much wonderful talent to work with. All you've got to do is give them something, you know, give them opportunities to excel, give them opportunities to really stand out. And he just doesn't do it. He just, he underserves each and every one of them.
Yeah. You know, it's just, you know, thinking about Dark Phoenix, it's one of those things where I'm just, it's a sad, again, it's kind of sad to reflect on, considering of all the history that it's kind of the last movie, and it ends on such a kind of a whimper. And I don't mean it, like, you can like the film, I think it's fine, but I think anyone watching it would agree that it's not the epic film that you would think that 19 years of X-Men history and movies and everything, you would think that there wouldn't be that sense of, there'd be more of a sense of like finale and like give it some power behind it with some like scope and get like a big battle and have everyone in it, like an Endgame, if you will. We never got that. And I know it's because when they were making it, they had to keep going full steam ahead. Like, they're going to make these forever.
Yeah.
So there really couldn't be an ending. I think that's what's sad about it, is that Dark Phoenix is, unfortunately, the last movie we're going to get. And it's just a very lackluster like ending to this epic thing that we've kind of all really enjoyed for the most part. And I think that whether you like the movie or not, I think you would agree that it's a shame that it has to end on this kind of note. I think it would be hard to argue that, yeah, this is a great ending. To, you know,
yeah, no,
to go
it's
on.
The worst reception in the history of the X-Men franchise. It's not the worst movie, in my view, but it is the worst reception. I mean, lowest opening ever, for lowest opening weekend ever for an X-Men movie. One of the lowest opening weekends ever for a Marvel-based movie. I mean, you have to really scrape the bottom of the barrel to find Marvel-based movies that were that had wide theatrical releases, feature films that had lower opening weekends than Dark Phoenix. Like, you've got to get into Ghost Rider: Spirit of Vengeance, Fantastic Four, Elektra, Howard the Duck. Those are the kinds of movies that Dark Phoenix beat. It's not beating anything close to the cream of the crop or even the middle of the pack. I mean, I think there have been like over 55, 56 Marvel-based feature films. I was checking out Box Office Mojo. I think Dark Phoenix is in like the bottom 10 for opening weekends. And then you compound that with the worst Rotten Tomatoes score, and you add on to that, you have the lowest cinema score, a B-, which may sound good, but it's actually not in terms of cinema score, especially for superhero movies that are more typically in the B-plus to solid A range is where most of them tend to fall. So this is well below that and below any previous installment of the X-Men franchise. So yeah, your individual assessment may vary, and of course ours do as well, but it's pretty much inarguable that if we're looking in terms of consensus, this is the worst reception an X-Men movie has ever had.
Yeah. And I'm not surprised. And I don't think, again, it's better than Apocalypse. I think that is saying something.
Nah, it's not. It's like,
I think it is. I mean, like it means that it's not a train wreck that movie was. I still dread the day I have to rewatch that movie. Because I'm going to watch it. I'm going to rewatch it eventually.
I mean, Dark Phoenix clears a bar that you can step over, so it's not really that much of a. It's not that much of an accomplishment. I mean, that's why I've said it's more faint praise than anything else. It's not as outright terrible as Apocalypse, but you know what? Maybe it is. Maybe a subsequent rewatch of Apocalypse will make me think, you know what? This is even better than Dark Phoenix. I don't know, but you know, in terms of that idea of, you know, is it sad that this is how the X-Men franchise goes out? I don't think so. It's in some ways I understand that perspective, but we're going to talk about our Patreon in our Patreon credit scene. And speaking of that, actually, I have some folks to thank. So bear with me for just a moment here. Let me say thank you to Lincoln Maurice, Leonardo Hernandez, and Jeremy Wyborn. They are the latest Patreons over at patreon.com/Marvel Studios News, where we have all kinds of exclusive content like a Monday through Friday daily news show, multiple Q&A shows. We have a Patreon exclusive Discord server where Paul and I are there chatting via text all the time. And I also do voice chat via office hours. And we have other, like the Marvel Unlimited Book Club is another exclusive show we do every month on our Patreon. And we also do Patreon credit scenes where we take a show like this and we discuss an additional topic, and that's available exclusively on the Patreon, which and that's just $1 a month, and it also includes 24-hour early access to the main show, like this one. So for more information on all the exclusives we have, be sure to check out patreon.com/Marvel Studios News. And my thanks again to Lincoln, Leonardo, and Jeremy for joining us over on our Marvel Studios News Patreon community. So for our Patreon credit scene, that's going to focus more on where we go from here as we look at the inevitable future and reboot with Marvel Studios. So, but looking to sum this up with the legacy of the X-Men franchise, I understand the perspective that this is a very important franchise that also holds a lot of sentimental value for fans of this specific franchise and also the superhero movie genre as a whole. I understand all of that, and I feel all of that. But part of the reason why I don't have that same kind of sadness for this as the end, why did it have to end on such a down note and all of those things, is that I never really put that kind of pressure on this movie in my own mind. You know, going into it, there was no way, despite the talk track, and I know the talk track changed, especially ever since the Disney-Fox deal closed, of the idea that, oh, well, this is the finale. This is the finale. It's the culmination and all of these things of, you know, 19 years of X-Men movies and all that. I didn't buy it. I knew who was saying it, and I knew why they had to say it, because what are they supposed to do? How are they supposed to sell this movie by going, oh, shucks, we were hoping we could do more, but, you know, they couldn't do it. So it was, I knew that it just wasn't genuine. The idea of this being the ending, the idea of this being the culmination, it could never really be that, because it was never actually intended to be that. It wasn't conceived to be that. So I won't hold that against the movie. And that has nothing to do with why I don't like Dark Phoenix. As I said, I wasn't disappointed by the movie. I just didn't like it. I couldn't have been disappointed because I didn't have any expectations for it. And part of the reason I didn't have any expectations is everything leading up to the movie led me to believe that it wasn't going to be that great. But I still went into it with an open mind, so I wasn't going in with high expectations, but I wasn't going in already committed to the idea of hating it. I was just hoping that I would see something decent and entertaining. That's all I wanted out of Dark Phoenix. I didn't quite get even that, which is unfortunate, but I don't see this as the end of the franchise. You know, as far as the culmination and everything, we've already got a couple of great endings from this franchise. Days of Future Past is a great ending for this series. And that movie actually focuses more on the cast and the characters that we spent more time with, and the iterations of the cast that we spent more time with and that we were more invested in since 2000. You look at most of this cast, they've been around since one movie ago in 2016. Right? I'm not that invested in Sophie Turner's Jean Grey, Ty Sheridan's Cyclops. Nothing against them, but I don't really know them. You know, because even when they gave me a movie with them in Apocalypse, as soon as it leaned much more heavily on the established cast. So the only veterans here were Michael Fassbender, James McAvoy, Jennifer Lawrence, and Nicholas Hoult. And no disrespect to them, but, you know, I was already losing interest in what they had been doing with those characters for a while. So Days of Future Past, and then also Logan for Hugh Jackman's Wolverine, those are the grand finales for me for the X-Men franchise. And that's the way that I'm going to be looking at it, is that this franchise really went out with a bang. It died in a blaze of glory or a dual blaze of glory with X-Men, Days of Future Past, and Logan. What happened in Apocalypse, although I guess Apocalypse was before Logan, so what happened with Dark Phoenix here, it's just a stale post-mortem fart.
Yeah, you know, I think I like the movie more than you. Just a little bit more, not much. But at the same time, it was kind of I was glad I watched it. You know, I'm glad that I saw it, but I'm ready to move on at the same time. And there's just not a lot to say about it, because not a lot really happens. There's nothing really different. There's nothing really different in it that makes me engaged or anything like that. So it's just, I'm ready to move on. And I think that's the kind of the feeling that you get when you leave for a lot of us. Not for everyone, but for a lot of us, they're just like, okay, I'm ready. Wasn't a turd, but I'm ready to move on. And I think that's where I stand, is I'm ready to move on. And yep. So, yeah, bring on the new X-Men 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, well, and I think the general audience is ready to move on without even bothering to see Dark Phoenix, and I don't really blame them. But anyway, that's where we will wrap up this episode of Marvel Studios News. Thank you all so much for listening, and if you enjoyed Dark Phoenix and you made it all the way to the end of this episode, I won't say I'm sorry, but I do appreciate that you made it all the way through to the end of this episode, hearing us rip this movie. But anyway, thank you to everyone, whether you like the movie or not, just for listening and being part of our community here. We really do appreciate those of you who check in with us each and every week, and even those of you who just check in with us occasionally. And make sure you follow us in all the places you can. As I mentioned before, lots of exclusive content over at patreon.com/Marvel Studios News. You can also find us every day on the website, marvelstudiosnews.com, Facebook and Instagram at Marvel Studios News, and on Twitter at Marvel Newscast. Paul, where can they find you?
Find me on Twitter at Herman22 with two N's, aka P Thug, and also on Instagram, Herman22 with two N's.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Mr. Sean Gerber, Sean spelled S-E-A-N. So for Paul, I'm Sean. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.